She is his master. It is a closer bond.
I turned and looked at her then, because that last part was rubbing salt in Cardinal's wounds. Was my new head of security at Danse Macabre here to make things worse or better? Echo was shorter than me tonight because I was wearing heels and she was in flat boots, but then she was security tonight, and I was hoping to have a date. Her hair was a brown so dark it was almost black. It even looked black until you got her too close to Jean-Claude's hair, or mine, but whereas we were curly, she had waves that helped hers fall in a more orderly fashion to her shoulders, framing one of the most delicate triangles of a face I'd ever seen. She was one of the few women who made me think dainty, but once you looked into her dark blue eyes, you stopped thinking dainty and started thinking dangerous. She wore no makeup when she worked security, which would have made most women's faces look plain, but Echo's natural black lashes and brows framing deep, rich blue eyes and all that dark hair, well, plain was just never a word you thought of when looking at her. Beautiful, maybe, but never plain. She did her best to dress down for the job, with a looser black t-shirt over a tighter-fitting black tank top. I couldn't see the tank top under her t-shirt, but I knew it was there, because she didn't like the weapons at her waist digging into her bare skin, so there'd be a layer of clothing to protect her bare skin. She'd had a business jacket thrown over all that, so that she hid as much of the trim figure underneath as she could. But you never forgot that Echo was a beautiful woman for very long, no matter how she tried to hide it. Since I was sleeping with her, that should have been a good thing, but she made me strangely nervous, like I was 14 again and had my first crush.
You don't know anything! No bond is closer than true love! No bond!
She screamed it and started walking stiffly toward us all.
I think you are too emotionally overwrought to work tonight, Echo said, her voice very calm.
That is not your decision. It's Damien's. He's the manager, not you.
Echo looked past the tall, red-headed vampire who was still stalking toward us, to the tall, red-headed vampire standing behind his desk, though since Ricky and Roger were the ones who would be in the line of her anger first, I guessed Echo and I could stay calm a little longer. Though I wasn't sure I was capable of calm with all of Damien's emotions boiling through my head. My mouth was dry, which meant his was, because he was afraid, so afraid. Afraid of losing Cardinal, afraid of not having enough of a relationship with me to take up the slack, afraid of giving up too much to gain too little. I started to say aloud that he couldn't use me as his next relationship, that I was booked up, but Echo touched my arm as if she read my mind, or my heart, or my intentions. Whatever it was, that one slight touch on my arm kept me from saying that bit of truth, and the moment passed and we were on to other things.
Damien is a fine manager, but I'm the head of security here, and if I think you're a danger to the peaceful workings of this club tonight, then you will not work tonight.
You have no right to treat me like that!
She turned and looked at Damien.
Tell her that I'm working tonight! Tell her that you want me at your side in the dance tonight!
He looked at her, and then past her to Echo, and then at me. I felt his gaze like a weight, as if he'd touched me.
Tell her, Damien! Tell her that she can't treat me this way!
Echo is head of security at Danse Macabre, Cardinal, he said, in a voice as empty and neutral as any I'd ever heard from him.
But you're the manager!
I am.
Then tell her she's wrong. Tell her she can't send me home like a child.
She was standing in front of him now, so tall that she blocked my view of Damien's face and most of his body, but I could still feel him. He wasn't sad anymore. He felt nothing, as if he'd locked all his emotions away along with his body movement. Without seeing him clearly, I knew he was standing there in that utter stillness that the older vampires could do. It was that stillness that made me want to stare at them harder, as if once I looked away, they would just sink into that stillness and vanish. I'd thought it was a way of hiding what they were thinking, but now I could feel that it was more than that, that it was a way of being still all the way to the core of their being. It was like the quiet place I went in my head when I knew I had to pull the trigger and kill someone. In that moment, I felt nothing but the gun in my hand, thought about nothing but how best to use the gun and get the shot. It became very analytical, cold, physical logic. I felt that from Damien now, and knew he was either hiding away his feelings, so the next few minutes wouldn't hurt that much, Or he was hiding them away so he could do what needed doing. Or maybe both. I've let my love for you interfere with my ability to manage the club, or at least my ability to treat you like an employee.
I don't know what you're talking about, Damien. I love that we work together every night.
You love keeping an eye on me at work, but you hate the job. You hate watching me flirt on the dance floor, and you hate having to dance with strangers. You've gone from being one of the top moneymakers on tips to making almost nothing, because you're so busy watching me with my partners that you don't pay enough attention to your own dance partners.
I'll do better tonight,
she said, touching his arm. People come here to dance with vampires and shapeshifters, Cardinal. They come for the illusion that they can have a romance with one of us. They come for someone to pay attention to them, to really look at them, talk to them, listen. If Guilty Pleasures is about lust and the possibility of sex, then Danse Macabre is about romance and the possibility of a relationship.
But you and I are each other's relationship, she said,
a hand on both his arms as if she were trying to get him to look at her or shake some sense into him.
That's what I wanted more than anything else in the world. A real relationship with one person who truly loved me.
I love you. I love you truly, madly, completely.
People come here to be listened to feel special. But you're so worried that I'm cheating on you that you don't have any room to even pretend for a few minutes.
Pretend what?
She yelled it, even though they were inches apart. Her hands dug into his bare arms hard enough that she mottled his skin. Roger said softly,
Do we need to be here?
His whisper made Ricky and me jump, as if we'd been frozen by the emotions in the room.
No,
Echo said, stepping back and herding me ahead of her and both male guards as she got us out of the office and into the corridor that led to the main part of the club. She wasn't leaving me alone with Cardinal, and I couldn't argue, because I wasn't worried about her hurting me anymore. I was more worried that she'd force me to kill her. If Cardinal wanted to do suicide by cop, she needed to find a different cop, someone who wasn't emotionally invested. Of course, that emotional investment had made me hesitate and not shoot her earlier. I couldn't remember the last time I'd let a vampire make my holy objects glow that much and not shot them. If she pulled this shit with a regular police officer, they'd have shot her a long time before they were blinded by holy fire. I was glad I hadn't shot her, and that would make me hesitate the next time. If there was a next time. Echo stayed half a step behind me, with Ricky behind her and to my other side. She'd sent Roger ahead to wait by the door at the end of the hallway. That she kept Ricky with her meant she had some faith in his skills. Or maybe Roger was just that much worse. I owed him a thank you for suggesting we leave before Damien finished his talk with Cardinal. One of the things I was working on in therapy was that I had trouble protecting my boundaries from the people I was close to. But apparently Roger was better at it. I could shoot and fight just fine, but if Roger Parks was better at boundary issues, maybe I could just have him follow me around and get me out of awkward emotional conversations all night. It wasn't in security's job description, but it might be damn useful to me.
If you are in a private area with Cardinal, you must have security personnel with you from this point on, Anita,
Echo said. Okay, I said. She gave me a sideways glance.
You aren't going to argue with me?
No. If she wants to suicide by cop, I don't want it to be me.
Suicide by cop. When a person wants to commit suicide but is afraid to do the task themselves, so they threaten police or pose a threat to innocence, so that police feel they must kill them to protect others or themselves. Yes?
I nodded. Yeah, that's it.
Do you believe that was what Cardinal intended with you tonight?
No, at least not in the front of her head.
Front of her head?
It was a subconscious thought in the back of her head, not a conscious thought, which would be in the front of the head.
Oh, I think much more happens in the back of people's heads than in the front.
Ain't that the God's honest truth? I said.
Yes, I think it is,
Echo said. I could feel the bass beating through the still closed door. I kept walking and Roger opened the door, so well timed it was like an automatic door. I didn't even have to pause as we walked through. In fact, I hadn't been planning to pause. I was just so used to security opening doors for me, I took it for granted now. When did that happen? There had been a time when I would have known as much about Cardinal's background as possible by now. But I'd trusted that if Jean-Claude thought she was okay, then she was. But what a 600-year-old vampire king would think was okay might not be okay to me. Was it a sign that I trusted Jean-Claude that much, or that I'd grown arrogant? Echo paused with her hand on the door and turned to say,
I will make certain that Cardinal does nothing unfortunate tonight. If you can put this incident aside and be truly present for the date and its issues, I think that would be best. If you talk of all this first, it may spoil the mood.
I was thinking the same thing. She smiled, and it took her face from severe to truly beautiful. I understood why she didn't use that particular smile much at work. Customers would have begged her to dance with them, even as dressed down as she could manage. I basked in the warmth of that smile because I was on a very short list of people that got to have it aimed at them. It made me smile back and blush, which was a habit I couldn't seem to break entirely. The blush made her smile broaden enough to flash a delicate hint of fang and show that there was a dimple in that classically beautiful face. She touched my face and leaned in for a very unprofessional kiss. I knew how to French kiss a vampire without nicking myself on the fangs, but her mouth was smaller than that of anyone else I'd kissed, so it was more of a challenge. But it was worth it. She drew back first, leaving me a little breathless.
Enjoy as much of tonight as you can, Anita.
It's Jean-Claude. What's not to enjoy? She smiled.
Very true. I look forward to the next time we can share our king.
I blushed and couldn't stop it. Me too. She turned and looked at Ricky and Roger. I'd sort of forgotten about them. Echo could have that effect on me. Roger was staring at the floor as hard as he could. Ricky was looking at us as if we were something to eat. I glared at him. You got something to add?
You can't blame a man for enjoying the show.
Yes, actually, I can.
I am your superior, and she is your queen. Both are people you should not be leering at,
Echo said.
I can control what I say and what I do around beautiful women, but I can't control involuntary body responses.
We don't care about your erection,
Echo said.
It's not important to us.
His anger slid across my skin like the smell of well-cooked meat. I'd acquired the ability to feed on anger the way that Jean-Claude could feed on lust. He'd shared that ability with me, but so far, siphoning off people's anger was something only I could do. I sniffed the air, making a big deal out of it. Calm the fuck down, Ricky. You're starting to smell like food. Yummy, yummy anger.
Fuck you.
You wish.
You just can't behave respectfully, can you?
Echo asked.
Anita just seems to bring out the worst in me, I guess,
Ricky said.
You are officially on probation, Ricky,
she said.
That's not fair!
Life isn't supposed to be fair.
What does that mean?
It means that only children whine. That's not fair. Grown-ups understand that fairness is rare and good treatment must be earned.
I'm good at my job.
You are. That's why I'm not going to fire you tonight. But remember this, Ricky. If you disrespect Anita or any of the female employees again, you will be out of a job.
How can I not look at them and do my job?
You can look, but don't leer.
I don't understand the difference.
She sighed.
I think you mean that.
She frowned and turned to me.
Go to our king and shared lover. I will see that Cardinal does no harm and try to explain the difference between a look and a leer to this one.
Good luck on that last part, I said.
Perhaps I will enlist some of the other male guards to explain the masculine niceties of looking but not being lecherous.
Good idea, I said. She opened the door for me, and the music engulfed us so that I could barely hear her as she told me goodbye, with her face back to its super serious head of security expression. There'd be no more kisses until she joined us for the date. I found myself a little sad to leave her without one more kiss. I'd had other female lovers, but never one that made me think words like girlfriend.
Was Echo my girlfriend?
I wasn't sure what to call her, but I was beginning to want to call her something. I'd never had a woman make me feel like I wanted to hang a title on her. I'd had one who had demanded it, but I hadn't wanted to call her my girlfriend. This time it would be my idea, and ironically I wasn't sure Echo would want the title. She'd take it if I wanted to give it to her, but she didn't need it to feel secure, and maybe that was part of why I wanted to give it to her. Romance can be very confusing. I left my girlfriend behind to make sure the live-in girlfriend of my ex-lover and current vampire servant didn't harm anyone, while I went to have a date with our shared lover. I would have said shared boyfriend, but Echo really only had one person she dated, and that was Fortune, the love of her life and afterlife. Fortune was my girlfriend's girlfriend. Or maybe Fortune was my girlfriend, too. So did that make either of them my girlfriend's girlfriend, or just my girlfriend's? Was Jean-Claude their girlfriend's boyfriend? Or since everyone had at least occasional sex with each other, were words like boyfriend and girlfriend too old-fashioned to cover it? I was beginning to get a headache, and it wasn't from the dance music. Chapter 4. I called Edward from my Jeep because I'd finally figured out how to use the Bluetooth so that I could talk and drive at the same time. It was a little bit like being able to pat your head, rub your stomach, and jump on one foot at the same time while chewing gum, but much more useful and less silly-looking. The phone had rung 3 times before I realized I hadn't done the time zone math, and it was probably the wee hours of the morning there. Had I learned anything that couldn't wait until he was awake? No. I hung up, hoping he'd sleep through it. I wasn't used to Edward being half a world away from me. We'd never been more than about a 5-hour plane ride from each other before. I guess Ireland wasn't that much longer, actually, but the time difference made it feel like more. I wasn't surprised when his ringtone filled the car just moments after I'd hung up. I'd have called him back, too. Hey, Ed.
Ted, I said. I'm in my room alone. You can call me whatever you want.
His voice was thick and rough with sleep. I forgot the time change. Sorry.
Just tell me you found out something that will help.
Yes and no. There have always been vampires in Ireland, or at least for the last 1,000 years and change. I heard the sheets move as he changed positions.
Say again?
I did.
How do you know?
First Jean-Claude told me, and then we had one of the vamps from Ireland in town.
I didn't know you had any Irish vampires in St. Louis.
He doesn't consider himself Irish even though he was a vampire there for about 1,000 years, give or take a few hundred.
You don't have that many vampires that old. Or you didn't. Is it one of the Harlequin?
See, he really did know most of my business. No, it's Damien.
What? He doesn't sound Irish.
Like I said, he doesn't consider himself Irish. He said, I just died there. He still thinks of himself as a Viking. He was what history calls a Danish Viking, and that's still how he thinks of himself.
Even after a millennium in Ireland?
Yep.
Okay, I don't have to understand Damien's motives. What did you learn?
His old mistress, she who made him, literally, you can't say her name without risking her invading your mind. She can do some of the tricks that the Mother of All Darkness could do, and some of the old Vampire Council could do.
He tell you, or you experience it?
She visited us once. She caused fear in Damien, and it spread to me and Nathaniel. It was pretty awful. I think that if Richard and Jean-Claude hadn't been able to lend a metaphysical hand, she could literally have killed us with fear. I heard the sheets move again. I was betting he was sitting up against the headboard.
You mean scared to death? Literally?
Yes.
I know you've met other vampires that could cause fear like that.
Night hags, yeah, but they were amateurs compared to she who made him.
You really don't want to say her name out loud.
No, I really don't.
She spooked you.
Let's just say that I don't want to revisit.
You don't spook that easy,
he said. Not normally, no.
Why didn't the Irish know they had vampires?
He asked. Damien said that they kept their numbers small. 12 at the most, and usually fewer. They took a little blood here and there, and when they did kill, it was easy to blame it on war, wild animals, just the violence of the day. He said there was usually some battle or something to blame disappearances on.
That makes sense.
He also said that the jail nearby didn't care if people died a little early as long as they weren't the ones who paid the jailer for better treatment.
1,000 years ago, jails and hospitals would have been perfect for a vampire to feed from. And he's right. No one would have given a second thought to a few more deaths.
Most of the vampires I've known well wouldn't feed in jail or hospitals. It wasn't elegant enough victims, I guess. I know the Vampire Council didn't feed like that.
They were aristocrats, Anita. They could prey on peasants and no one would question it, or no one that mattered. There were enough human nobles who used the common people like their personal hunting ground and no one questioned them either.
The only two nobles I know that were ever brought up on charges were Elizabeth Bathory and Gilles de Rais. But at least Bathory was caught because she had the bad taste to use a minor noble's daughter as a victim. Only de Rais was actually put on trial without a noble victim.
I always thought one of them must have had a vampire involved somewhere.
The vampire community actually thinks that Gilles de Rais sold his soul to the devil after his friend Joan of Arc was burned alive. It sort of damaged his faith in God's goodness.
I could see that,
Edward said. You and I both know that even if the devil wanted his soul, the urges that made him a murdering pedophile had to be there all along.
Yes, but he used his faith in God to not act on them. It was the theory that the church used for centuries that you could pray yourself out of pedophilic urges, so become a priest.
Yeah. Ask the victims of pedophile priests and nuns how that's worked out.
I didn't say I agreed with it.
Sorry. Raised Catholic, so it's a sore point with me.
Sometimes I forget that about you.
What?
That once you were a good little Catholic schoolgirl.
I actually didn't go to Catholic school.
Really? So no little plaid skirt outfit?
No. Sorry to disappoint you.
Schoolgirl really isn't my thing.
Somehow I didn't think it would be. I could almost hear the smile on the other end of the phone as he said,
I don't think either of us spends a lot of time wondering what each other's kinks are.
Nope, I said.
So why is she who must not be named suddenly going apeshit with her vampires?
Damien doesn't think it's her.
Could it be some of her vampires without her knowledge?
He only left 5 years ago, Edward, and he says she'd kill any of her vamps that were this careless.
Vampires are legal in more countries than ever before, Anita. Why is she still in hiding if she's not doing this?
Apparently she's like a lot of the really old ones. She doesn't believe the new attitude will last, and when the humans start killing vampires again, she'll still be hidden in her fortress in Ireland untouched.
Then Damien's old group aren't the only vampires in Ireland anymore.
She was powerful enough to keep out other vampires for centuries. If she can't stop this new wave, then Damien thinks she's lost power.
What would cause her to go from scary enough that you don't even want to speak her name to letting a bunch of new vampires run riot in Dublin?
Damien didn't have a guess on that.
Do you?
I thought about it as I drove through the night-dark neighborhoods, wending my way toward the old warehouse district that, thanks to the Circus of the Damned, had gotten gentrified into a tourist attraction area.
Anita? You still there?
I'm here, Edward, just thinking. I don't know. Vampires either grow in power or fade. The force I felt a few years back wasn't going to fade away.
If she who must not be named isn't causing this, but she can't stop it either, then what is going on?
It would almost have to be something more powerful than her that's just arrived in Ireland.
What could be more powerful than a night hag that can throw fear halfway across the world?
I'd say the mother of all darkness, but she's dead.
We killed her,
he said. Yes, we did. I could have quibbled that the actual killing part was mostly me, but if Edward hadn't fought his way to me with reinforcements, I'd have been dead instead of her, so we killed her. Striking the death blow without acknowledging all the people who helped you get in place to deliver it is just poor sportsmanship.
Then what else, or who else, is tough enough to make she who must not be named back off?
You do know it's she who made him, right?
Yeah, but saying it the other way is more fun.
I didn't know you were a Harry Potter fan.
We took turns reading them to Becca when she was little. By the end of the series, she helped read it aloud to all of us.
I can see why you like the books, I said.
So, what's scary enough to make She Who Must Not Be Named scared?
I didn't say she was scared, Edward.
Scary people only back off for one reason, Anita.
And that is?
That they meet someone scarier, he said.
Or you reach an understanding like you and I did when we just worked together but weren't friends yet.
True, but I don't think ancient vampires really have work friends.
Not really, I said.
How do I contact Damien's old master?
You don't.
She has to know something about this, Anita.
I've shared Damien's memories of this woman, this thing, and you do not want to be alone with her.
I can take care of myself.
I know that, but unless you're going to kill her, leave her alone.
She really did scare you.
Yes, Edward, she really did.
I still need information from her or one of her group.
I'll talk to Jean-Claude and Damien and the others. I'll see if I can find you someone to talk to without dealing directly with her.
The last vampire you were this scared of was the Mother of All Darkness.
Which should give you a clue why I don't want you messing with her while I'm half a world away.
You think I need the backup?
I think anyone going up against her would need backup.
I'll bear it in mind, he said,
and I didn't like the way he said it. Promise me that you will wait until I get back to you to try to find her.
People are dying here, Anita.
But they're strangers to me. You aren't.
You just don't want to explain to Donna and the kids why I'm not around anymore.
Damn straight I don't, so don't get dead while I'm not there to watch your back.
I'm trying to get them to invite you in on this, but they have a serious hard-on against necromancy here.
The Irish are so welcoming to almost all kinds of magic, except mine. Peachy.
I may have found a way around the mainstream police to bring you over.
Do tell.
No, I'll share when it's a reality. Or I'll share when you tell me how to contact Damien's old master.
Fine. Keep your secrets. I've got a date to get to.
Jean-Claude or Micah and Nathaniel?
He asked. Some mix of those, I said.
Do I want to know?
Probably not.
Have fun, then, and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Edward, you're a heterosexual man. I plan to do all sorts of things that you wouldn't do. He laughed then, and we hung up on the sound of laughter, which was a good way to end. I hoped Edward would keep his promise to leave Damien's old master alone. I was supposed to be his best man at his wedding to Donna. They were finally going to make it legal. I did not want to miss the wedding because the groom got killed in Ireland. I said a quick prayer that he'd be safe and that we'd find a way to stop the killings. I saw the bright lights of the Circus of the Damned up ahead, turning the night into a carnival of color. I would avoid the bright front and the happy crowds and go in the back, where it was darker, less crowded, and far more romantic. Jean-Claude was waiting for me. It would be a good night. Chapter 5. Jean-Claude's plan to help Damien was to have him sleep over with us and Nathaniel. He agreed that the three of us needed to strengthen our metaphysical connections with each other. Micah agreed with it too, which was good, because one of our rules was that the core group of us, the primaries for each other, had to be okay with anything that might affect the domestic arrangement, and adding sleepovers with Damien, even without sex, would change things if it became a regular thing. You don't think how important just sleeping together can be for pair bonding until you keep changing how you do it, and whom you do it with. Sex was so much easier than actually sleeping with your lovers. It also helped that Micah had been asked to travel out of town to settle a dispute between two rival shapeshifter groups. They were afraid it would escalate to open war if they couldn't find someone to come in and help negotiate a settlement between them. Both group leaders had invited the coalition in, so the chances were good that Micah wouldn't have to fight anyone to force the fighting to stop, which was great. It meant that when I kissed him goodbye, I worried less that I'd never see him again. After years of him kissing me goodbye when he didn't know if his badge-wearing fiancé was coming home safe, it was my turn. Let me just say that turnabout was not only fair play, but it was downright scary. He had bodyguards with him, and Raphael the Rat King was going with him for a show of solidarity, even though neither group were were-rats. Because the rats were the largest and most powerful single lycanthrope group in the United States. Raphael had done the unprecedented and forged all the rat groups into one huge Rodare with one king. Him. His actions had been part of what inspired Micah to make the coalition into a governing body of the groups that either wanted to join or were too dangerous to be left unsupervised. I was standing beside the big bed in a blue silk robe that touched the floor when Damien came through the door. Jean-Claude was still in the bathroom cleaning up. He'd even insisted on blow-drying my hair with a diffuser so that my hair would be dry before bed and my curls would be intact. I hadn't been allowed to use a blow-dryer on my own hair since the infamous white man's fro incident. Thanks to Jean-Claude, I stood there with every curl in place. Come to think of it, the blue silk robe had been a gift from him, so it was all his doing. He'd even managed to give me a moment alone with Damien. I suddenly felt stage-managed, but it wasn't the first time, and it wouldn't be the last. Jean-Claude had lived by his social wits for too many centuries to stop now. Damien hesitated just inside the door. He was wearing a green velvet and brocade robe long enough to hide all but the tips of his slippers. They were new, but the robe was Victorian, as in he'd bought it during that time. It had rubbed spots where the velvet had worn away, and patches where it had been repaired like a child's much-loved stuffed toy. I knew it was something Damien wore when he was needing reassurance, like his version of our comfy clothes at the end of a hard day. "How did Cardinal take the news of you sleeping over?" I asked, because I couldn't help myself. "Badly, but Jean-Claude made it an order from him, so she couldn't refuse it, or I couldn't refuse. When your king summons, you go and do his bidding. That she understood." "Okay," I said. Not sure if I'd really gotten an answer, but I let it go. It was too confusing to do anything else with it.
"I like the robe," he said.
"Jean-Claude bought it for me." I touched the sash. He said he wanted me to expand my color range for lingerie.
"Well, I approve, if my approval matters."
"I'm not sure what you mean by if your approval matters. You matter, and compliments are always welcome." He smiled.
"Good."
He walked toward me and looked behind me.
"I take it that it's Jean-Claude I hear in the bathroom."
I couldn't hear a thing from the bathroom, but I bowed to his superior vampire hearing and said, "Yeah, he'll be joining us in a minute." "Wait, how did you know it wasn't Nathaniel?"
"He hugged me in the hallway and said he'd be there as soon as he changed from work."
There are going to be a lot of disappointed fans at Guilty Pleasures when they learn that he's not going on stage again tonight, I said, smiling.
"I'm sorry he had to cut his act short just for me," Damien said, not smiling.
"Nathaniel is thrilled that we're going to work on our triumvirate for a change."
"He seemed happy about it."
"He is happy about it."
"But are you?" he asked.
"Happy about it?" I asked. "Your girlfriend almost attacked me when I hadn't done more than shake your hand. I'm a little worried about her reaction tomorrow night."
"That's completely fair," he said.
"You look like you're about to bolt back out the door, Damien." He came to me then, looking uncertain.
"We're going to be sleeping together tonight, and we've been lovers. So why is this awkward?"
"Maybe because we were lovers, but now we're not, and we're just sleeping together tonight and nothing else." He smiled, a little sad around the edges.
"I'd be willing for more, but I know that it wouldn't be fair to you or Cardinal, or maybe even to me."
"If you want a clean break from Cardinal, then do that. But I won't be the excuse for the big blowout fight. That's on you and her, not me."
"I said it wouldn't be fair to anyone."
"You did. I guess I'm just beating the point home."
"I appreciate you and Jean-Claude letting me sleep with you tonight. You are both good masters and try to take care of your people."
"Thanks. We do our best." We stood there, close enough to touch, but not touching, and it was those last few empty inches that screamed awkwardness. The bathroom door opened behind us. Damien looked up, but I kept looking at him. Jean-Claude said,
"Have you greeted each other at all?"
I turned and looked at him then. "We said hello."
"I know you do not kiss hello, but hugging must be allowed even by Cardinal."
"I think we've missed the window for hugging," I said, frowning at him.
"Do not frown at me, ma petite. It is you who is being silly.
You have a Viking warrior in front of you, as striking and beautiful a man as Cardinal is a woman, and yet you refuse to touch him. Even friends touch more than the two of you.
He strode farther into the room, dressed in his own comfort robe, but it wasn't threadbare. It was as beautiful as all his other favorite clothes. The robe was black, with more thick black fur at the lapels and sleeves. I knew the fur was even softer and more luxurious than it looked. I loved the way it framed a triangle of his chest, making it look even whiter and more perfect than it was. He'd tied it loosely so that it showed more of his chest, enough so the cross-shaped burn scar on his chest showed faint and darker against his skin. Some human had shoved a cross into him in a bid to survive, but I knew that long-ago person had failed. I had a cross-shaped burn scar on one arm. A vampire's human servant had branded me with it, though it was funny that it would make me look like holy items burned me like a vampire. I'd killed him before his master could kill me. Jean-Claude and I had done the same thing for the same reason. If something hurts you and tries to kill you, you fight back. If something tries to kill you, you try to kill it first. Sometimes life comes down to very simple rules. I looked up at Jean-Claude as he stood there motioning at Damien. I looked up into those green eyes and that face that was more perfect now than when I'd met him, because something about becoming my servant had literally changed his bone structure so he was even more perfect, more handsome, more sexy vamp than he'd been before. I hadn't done it consciously, but I had changed things about Damien that had been true for 1,000 years, and yet I was nervous about giving him a hug. It was ridiculous when you thought about it. I stepped forward and put my arms around his waist, feeling the harsher rub of the old velvet. Real velvet isn't like the modern version. It's not soft and squishy, more soft but rougher. But Damien was real and solid as I hugged him, and that was the point. He hesitated a second, then put his arms around me. He seemed to like the way the silk slid under his hands. He looked down at me and smiled.
"Greetings, my master."
"Hey, Damien." We smiled at each other and hugged for real, then broke apart. Jean-Claude threw his hands up at us.
"You are exasperating, both of you. And where is our cat? We must to bed before dawn decides things for us."
He was right. I could feel the press of it in the air even deep underground where we were. It wasn't as easy to feel the pull of it, but sensing sunrise and sunset seemed to be a natural ability for most animators and necromancers. I'd fought many a night with dawn my only hope of surviving, and I'd had days when sunset meant the monsters would rise and eat me. "We're less than 2 hours out," I said. Damien shuddered. I touched his arm.
"It will be all right."
"Enough of this," Jean-Claude said and took off his robe.
His body looked incredibly white against the black of the robe, as if his skin were carved of marble, and he was absolutely nude. He looked like some Renaissance statue come to life, like a male version of Pygmalion come to make all your romantic wishes come true. Damien looked at the floor as if the rug at the foot of the bed had suddenly gotten much more interesting. You'd think after 1,000 years of life, he'd be less embarrassed by nudity, or maybe it was the nudity in question. Jean-Claude could have that effect on people. Or maybe it was the whole heterosexual man outside the locker room thing.
"We're just sleeping with Damien, remember?" I said, half laughing.
"Since I am not sleeping beside Damien, but on the other side of you, ma petite, I think my lack of clothing will not infringe upon his virtue."
Damien was so not looking at the other man in the room. I tried not to laugh again at his discomfort, because there'd been a time when I'd have been just as uncomfortable for other reasons. I'd tried so hard not to have sex with Jean-Claude, to not let him seduce me. For Damien, nudity just wasn't a thing that straight men did with other men much, at least not in the modern day, and Damien was very straight, much to Nathaniel's disappointment. My happily bisexual fiancé would have loved for Damien to be at least as friendly as Richard was with Jean-Claude. Oddly, Richard was just about as heterosexual as Damien, but he did bondage with us. There were needs we met in Richard's life, and he in ours, because of it. Damien was utterly vanilla. Not a fault, but for the rest of us in these relationships, it made it even more awkward. because we were so rocky road with extra cherries, gobs of whipped cream, and sprinkles on top. Damien looked at me, and the look seemed to ask a question as I stood there in my blue robe. I'm wearing jammies under my robe, I said. Damien smiled. Should I say thank you or aww? That made me smile. Either. Neither. Let's get some sleep.
We are still waiting for Nathaniel, Jean-Claude said, but we can get into bed while we wait.
He walked to the side of the bed nearest the outer door, which had become his side. He flung the black coverlet aside to reveal sheets the same royal jewel-tone blue as my robe. You matched my lingerie to the sheets, I said. He smiled, obviously pleased with himself, but it was as he swept back the blue sheets with a flamboyant gesture that I realized he was nervous. It had taken me years to figure out that though he could be flamboyant, it wasn't his preference. And when he was doing it, when it wasn't necessary, it meant he was nervous. Why the nerves? I wondered as he climbed between the sheets and lay down. His long black curls spread across the pillow perfectly so that they framed his face, caressed the pale spill of one shoulder, and still managed to leave half his face almost bare of hair, so that the royal blue pillowcase framed the perfect line of his cheek. It also brought the blue very close to his eyes, so that they went from a blue so dark as to be almost navy, to suddenly a brighter blue set off by the thick black lace of his eyelashes, the perfect arch of his eyebrows. It was the kind of show he'd put on for me when he was trying to convince me just how beautiful he was, except he'd worn pajamas, because he'd known that him nude made me run for hills in the early days. Did he want Damien to see him as beautiful? Or was one of the most gorgeous men on the planet needing reassurance that I still appreciated his beauty? If it was for Damien's benefit, that was a conversation for another night. But if it was for mine, that I could do something about. If it was for something else altogether, I'd ask Jean-Claude later when we were alone. I smiled at him and let him see that I saw every bit of theatrical-worthy beauty on display in the bed. If we'd been willing to let down our metaphysical shields, he could have felt exactly how much I admired the view, and I'd have known precisely what his motives were. But then Damien was my servant, as I was to Jean-Claude. So maybe we'd all have gotten a peek into each other, and that might have made Damien run for the hills, depending on what we were all thinking and feeling. You do know that one of the reasons it took so long for you to seduce me is that I just couldn't believe that anyone as beautiful as you really wanted to date me, and not just make me another notch on their bedpost. He smiled, and some tension left him, so at least part of what was going on in his head was a need for reassurance from me. I'd come into this relationship believing that someone who had been a ladies' man for centuries wouldn't need any reassurance. Jean-Claude had taught me that everyone needed it.
There are no notches on my bedposts, ma petite.
I grinned at him.
The bedposts couldn't survive all your conquests.
There are not so many as that.
And then he laughed. I felt a bubble of eagerness in my stomach, like happy butterflies. It wasn't me. Nathaniel is almost here, I said. The bodyguards gave a businesslike knock and opened the door for our other half. Or would it be our other third? Or our fourth? Nathaniel walked in wearing a pair of silky lavender sleeping shorts that fit him very nicely. So nicely that the view from the front distracted me for a minute from the rest of him. But I recovered because it was all a nice view. His shoulders were wide, his arms well-muscled, his chest deep, and his stomach flat and fit. He'd started to get a six-pack of abs, but every time he got truly cut across his abs, he lost too much of that great ass of his, and Nathaniel just didn't look right below a certain weight. He had the Adonis belt where the line of his waist did that soft, square line down along the hip, now hidden inside the silky shorts. The muscles of his thighs were impressive, and so were his calves. He'd actually had to cut down on his weightlifting because he'd started to muscle up more than he wanted to for dancing on stage. Genetics would have let him muscle up in a way that the other two men in the room couldn't. Jean-Claude and Damien both looked great. And Jean-Claude hit the gym for the same reason Nathaniel did, so he'd look great taking his clothes off on stage. But he was built long and lean like a long-distance runner, or a basketball player, as opposed to a football player. Damien didn't hit the gym as hard as the other two, but then he got to keep all his clothes on at Danse Macabre when he danced with customers or his dance partners. Knowing you're going to get nude in front of strangers was a great incentive for working out more. Nathaniel's hair was still damp from the shower, so it was a darker brown than its true red auburn color. He'd tied it back in a braid, still wet, because when your hair reaches to your calves, you have to braid it to sleep or you strangle yourself and your partners by the end of the night. He had an even better than normal smile, so for once, that dominated his face rather than his eyes. His driver's license listed blue as his eye color, but that was only because they wouldn't let him put down lavender or purple. The normal color was pale like lilacs, but depending on his mood, the lighting, and the color near his face, they could darken to the true purple of violets. They were almost that dark now, which meant his emotions were running high, but happy. If they'd been grape dark, it would have meant he was angry. His eyes rarely got that dark. His happiness was contagious, or it was to me. I felt myself smiling back at him like a mirror, and maybe there was more to that analogy than I wanted to think about since he was my muette bête, my animal to call. He nearly bounced across the room to wrap his arms around me and lay a very thorough kiss on my mouth. I responded to that eagerness with some of my own, so that the kiss grew into my hands, tracing the warm, muscled smoothness of his back. His hands smoothed over the silk of my robe and pressed hard enough that he probably knew what I was wearing underneath it.
"I'll give you all a few minutes alone," Damien said and started to move toward the door.
We broke from the kiss and Nathaniel said,
"Why do you want to leave?"
"Not everyone is as comfortable with physical affection as you are, Notre Minet,"
which meant our kitty or pussycat. It was a term of endearment, though you had to be careful which French word you used for cat, because some of them in French slang meant a very different kind of pussy.
"I thought you might want some privacy," Damien said.
Nathaniel looked genuinely puzzled.
"Nathaniel is an exhibitionist and a voyeur, Damien. He's not going to understand why the kiss made you uncomfortable."
Damien gave a smile that was more sad than happy.
"I guess that's true. But if you want to have sex, then I can come back."
"I always want to have sex," Nathaniel said, laughing a little as he said it, because it was pretty much true. "But I can control myself even around Anita. We're here for you tonight, Damien, and what you need."
Damien smiled, then almost laughed and shook his head.
"That means a lot to me, Nathaniel, because I know you mean it."
Nathaniel stepped away from me, just trailing his hand down my arm so he kept our fingers entwined as he moved toward Damien, trailing me behind him by just our fingertips.
"Of course I mean it, Damien. You're the other third of our triumvirate. Just tell me what I can do to help you feel better."
Damien gave a little laugh that seemed more nerves than anything else.
"If I asked you to wear something else to bed tonight, would you understand what I meant?"
I didn't have to see Nathaniel's face to know he was frowning. I could feel his confusion.
"I can take off the shorts and sleep nude, but I thought you'd be more comfortable if I slept in something."
Damien shook his head and smiled.
"That's not what I meant, Nathaniel. I don't want you to wear less to bed. I'd prefer if you wore more."
"More?" Nathaniel asked.
I wrapped my arms around his waist from behind so I could lay a light kiss on his bare back.
"He means that he'd like you to wear more than just the shorts to bed tonight."
He turned in my arms so he could see my face, and his expression was completely, "There must be some mistake." When he realized I was serious, he turned back to Damien.
"I'm sorry. I don't have anything that covers more of me that's pajamas."
"If you are protesting Nathaniel's shorts, then you must be deeply offended by what I am not wearing,"
Jean-Claude said from the bed, where he lounged like some sex god waiting for the cameras to roll. I'd have said that was just the fact that I was in love with him talking, but he really was as sexy as I thought. So said everyone else.
Nathaniel called out, "Jean-Claude!"
as if he'd just noticed him there. He let go of me and ran to the bed. He literally launched himself into the air and landed on top of Jean-Claude, catching himself on his hands and toes so that he didn't smack into the vampire, but was almost in a push-up over him. Only someone with Nathaniel's dexterity could have done it without the romantically exuberant gesture going horribly wrong. I couldn't have done it with practice runs.
I got to see Jean-Claude look genuinely surprised as he gazed up at Nathaniel. That alone made it worth it.
You look amazing tonight.
Jean-Claude laughed, but it was a good laugh.
Thank you, Pussycat. You look good enough to eat as you always do.
If you want to take a bite out of me, just ask.
Nathaniel's face was serious, and why not? He had become one of the Master Vampire's regular feeds, just like I had. But this was the first time that Nathaniel had offered to feed him while he hovered just above the other man's body, their faces almost touching. Nathaniel's body was in what amounted to a plank like you did in gym, except he was doing it on a soft mattress so that the muscles in his back, legs, and arms showed the strain of it. His ass was tight and firm, helping hold his body in place above Jean-Claude.
We are supposed to be getting ready to sleep, Pussycat. If I feed on you, it will not make me want to sleep.
Nathaniel smiled down at him.
I'll be good.
Of that, I have no doubt, Jean-Claude said.
Nathaniel lowered his face just enough to kiss Jean-Claude. It was a chaste kiss compared to the one that he and I had just done, but there was something very erotic about them doing it with Nathaniel's body held just above the other man's. Jean-Claude raised a hand to caress the line of Nathaniel's bare back, tracing the muscles that kept him so still above him. Nathaniel rolled over to one side on the bed to lay his head against Jean-Claude's chest. The vampire did the natural movement that went with that, which was to put his arm around Nathaniel's shoulders and hold him. He cuddled closer to Jean-Claude, snuggling into the hug. I wasn't sure what had gotten into Nathaniel tonight. He was in a good mood, but it was mercurial, so that even I didn't know what was coming next.
As I said, before I was so delightfully interrupted, I can wear more to bed if it will help your comfort level.
If the king wants to wear nothing to bed, then that is the king's pleasure, Damien said, but he was uncomfortable with the pair of them cuddled up in the bed. It showed in the way he held his shoulders and how he didn't stare too long at them. Was Nathaniel trying to make our so-heterosexual vampire more uncomfortable? That didn't seem like something Nathaniel would do to Damien, unless I'd missed the red-headed vampire making Nathaniel uncomfortable elsewhere. Nathaniel was usually one of the nicest people you'd ever meet, but occasionally, if something hit him wrong, his payback was very tit-for-tat. You do this to me, and I will do it to you in spades. What had Damien done to make Nathaniel want to pull on this issue so hard?
I do have pajamas, if it would make you more comfortable tonight,
Jean-Claude said, still holding Nathaniel in the crook of his arm. You said you were sleeping on the other side of Anita.
I am.
Then what you wear or don't isn't as pressing, he said at last.
They will be too long for him, but I could lend Nathaniel a pair of pajama bottoms,
Jean-Claude said.
I usually sleep nude,
Nathaniel said, rubbing his cheek against Jean-Claude's bare chest like a cat scent-marking its person. We both do, I said.
Show him what you are wearing, ma petite. Perhaps that will make our crimson-haired guest more willing to come to bed.
I didn't hesitate about it, because the way Damien was standing said in every line from shoulder to feet that he was debating leaving. I gave Damien all the eye contact I could as I dropped my robe beside Jean-Claude's and revealed a lacy blue camisole and boy shorts that were the same royal blue as the robe.
Beautiful, Nathaniel said.
Very nice, Damien said. Thanks. Jean-Claude picked it out, I said.
I chose the color, but it is your body that turns a bit of silk and lace into something extraordinary,
Jean-Claude said. I turned and started walking toward the bed, and maybe I put a little extra sway to my hips in the lacy boy shorts. I wanted Damien to want to come to bed. The men were being strangely uncooperative about it, or seemed to want to feed his straight guy nervousness about sharing a bed with extra men. I wanted to appeal to the part of him that wanted to crawl into bed beside me regardless of what the men were doing. I looked back at Damien and did my best to put the smile he wanted to see on my face. He looked stricken, as if I'd slapped him instead of just walked away in lacy pajamas. Apparently, I looked even better in the outfit than I'd thought, or at least my ass did.
I grabbed hold of one of the bedposts to help me climb up on the tall mattress. I very deliberately crawled the long way across the bed toward the other two men, so that Damien got a good view.
"Come to bed, Damien," I said, and turned to look over my shoulder at him, and the look on his face was everything I'd wanted it to be.
Was it unfair, since we weren't going to have sex? Maybe. But if we were going to see if sleeping between Nathaniel and me could fix the whole sweating blood and nightmares thing, Damien needed to get in bed with us and sleep. Damien took off his robe last, laying it at the far foot of the bed where we'd never accidentally touch it unless we grew several feet taller. When I say it's an orgy-sized bed, I'm not joking. Damien was wearing pajama bottoms that looked as silky as my robe, but they were a deep red and made his upper body look almost translucently pale, as if you should have been able to see his bones move as he walked, or as if the red brought out a shine to his skin that I hadn't noticed before.
Nice color on you.
The red, I mean.
Thank you, he said.
Come up on the bed so we can get some sleep, I said.
I hope I don't sleep. I hope I just die at dawn, he said.
I had a moment of wanting to ask if he meant die at dawn to wake the next night, or just die. He'd talked about it in his office, and that was never a good thing for a person to begin to speculate about. But I didn't ask, because some things you do not ask before bedtime, and you certainly don't ask about death and suicide when you're about to curl up between two walking corpses that may die with the rising of the sun. Damien climbed tentatively onto the other side of the bed from us. He had to crawl a ways to reach us, and then we had another awkward moment as he stared at the three of us. The men were still cuddled up, but I was leaning against them almost like they were the back to a lounge. Jean-Claude kissed Nathaniel on the forehead.
You need to sleep beside Damien, mon minet.
Nathaniel kissed just above his nipple, and for a moment I know he was debating whether to kiss on it, but he just came to his knees and kissed me lightly on the mouth and moved across the bed to make room for Damien. I lay down next to Jean-Claude. This would be a sort of test for me, too, because I generally put one of the other men between me and the vampire. I loved Jean-Claude to pieces, but the fact that he did usually die at dawn was unnerving to me. His body cooled as the hours passed, and sometimes I would wake from nightmares of being trapped in coffins with other vampires. I'd been a little claustrophobic thanks to a diving accident, but that first time waking up trapped in a coffin built for one but holding two, one corpse and me trapped in the dark, the other body cold and dead, and knowing that if I screamed no one was coming to help me, and I'd screamed anyway, had put the scary cherry on my phobia. So I'd earned my issues about sleeping beside vampires, but Jean-Claude and I were going to get married, so I needed to try. Jean-Claude kissed my cheek as I snuggled under the covers and up against his still very warm and wonderful body.
Thank you, ma petite. I know this is trying for you.
I don't mean to be a burden, Damien said.
It is not you that is a burden, Damien. It is any vampire that sleeps pressed against her. She finds it disturbing that we grow cooler as the hours pass, until it is truly like sleeping beside the dead.
Damien climbed under the covers and settled down close, but not touching me.
I'm sorry I didn't know that was an issue for you.
You said you don't die at dawn now, so you won't be an issue, I said.
Aren't we hoping that he does die at dawn, and there are no nightmares because we're here with him? Nathaniel asked.
Oui, mon minet, but perhaps saying it out loud like that to ma petite was not diplomatic.
Nathaniel looked very sorry. I could feel his instant regret.
I'm so sorry, Anita. I wasn't thinking.
It's okay, but please start thinking more. I wasn't really referring to what he'd said, but more how he'd acted as if he wanted to make Damien run away from us. Nathaniel had been asking for more up close and personal with Damien for months. I didn't understand why he wasn't helping more now that he had the chance. There was another awkward moment as we all tried to settle into sleep, but Jean-Claude was there this time, though, and didn't let the awkwardness grow.
Damien, do you sleep on your side, your back, or your stomach?
My back, or sometimes my stomach, Damien answered.
Ma petite and Nathaniel are side sleepers. I prefer my back, but we will do what we can to compromise.
Jean-Claude turned off the bedside lamp and snuggled up against my back until I could feel his groin pressed against the silk and lace boy shorts so that I wiggled against him just a little. His upper body curled over me almost protectively, one arm holding me close against him.
It has been too long since I took blood, ma petite. You can writhe against me all you like, but I will be of no use to you.
Nathaniel was on his side on the other side of Damien, who was still sitting upright. Lie down, Damien, please, I said, and smoothed some of the covers near me. He did what he was told, but he lay on his back with the arm closest to me across his stomach, and the one beside Nathaniel straight at his side. Both arms were above the covers. Nathaniel and I looked across the vampire's body at each other. Nathaniel raised his eyebrows at me as if asking, what now? We both had our arms under the covers.